I just can't do this anymore.
Welcome to the mess.
On the surface she looks fine, but what's inside ain't always in line. Life is good, life is bad, she's a mess, but a happy one.
And welcome to my podcast. Story time.
Hello and welcome to a new episode about Little Happy Mess. It's episode 21 today, and this episode is probably the most important one so far. And it's also the hardest to talk about. This time I didn't make any notes, so it will just come out of me. Just before we start, if you continuously listen to me, I would love you to go to Spotify or YouTube, depending on where you're listening to, and subscribe, like, leave me a comment. I'm always open for topic suggestions, and I would love you to engage with me, especially after this episode, but I'll leave a comment to this at the end. So, today I want to talk about my suicide story, which is basically the reason why I started this podcast, because like I've mentioned a million times, whenever I feel bad, I go to YouTube and I watch videos, and there is really, really cool videos on people who have tried to commit suicide and now talk about it and want to prevent people from doing it. But I think there could be more content out there, so I hope I contribute to not even positive content, but like just talking about it and giving people hope. So in the terms of it's something a lot of people struggle with and they don't know where to go to with it, and it always feels relieving that other people have those feelings too, and it feels comforting. To me, though. That's my opinion. Anyway, so I think I've teasered this episode for like ever since I started, but I never really had the guts to talk about it yet, because it's a little different to talk about it with a friend than to like upload an episode on YouTube available for everybody or Spotify. So it was this special summer of 2020 where my life kind of like shifted and changed a lot. And the reason why this is so is because I think it was like the beginning of July where I had a suicidal attempt. So I had been struggling with suicidal thoughts ever since I was like 21. So that was the first time I ever got them, and the first time I ever had suicidal thoughts, I immediately knew something was wrong, because like you just know, like from a rational point of view, that ending your life doesn't make any sense. And when you first get those thoughts, at least that's what was my case, you get really scared. You get scared that you do something stupid, because you don't, like, everybody wants to live, and there's always a part of us who wants to live. And so the first time I ever had it, I immediately went to a clinic. I told them about it. I stayed there for 2 weeks until I was better. That's when I got my first diagnosis and whatsoever. Really like got that treated, thought more about it. But like ever since I for the first time had those suicidal thoughts, they stayed. So they came back. And that's what the doctors told me too. That's something that I've also learned about in my education, that when you had them at one point, they stay. In terms of like you can go down there again, you can go down the slope because something got triggered in your brain. I don't have like any rational explanation for it. And so when I was 21, which is 6 years ago now, man, I'm old. they came back, and then I had, you know, I called those days where I was really suicidal, so up in my thoughts and everything, I called these days day zero, but then there was 0.1, 0.2, and it came back so often, and then the thoughts weren't even like the deepest I could go, so I went deeper than that. From 21 to like 25, I had moments where I really like, I figured out a plan and then I really wanted to do it, but something always prevented me from it. If it wasn't myself, I was like, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to talk about it with someone. I just waited until like moments came where someone was gonna, for example, come into my room or whatsoever. So one time, for example, I already had like pills prepared that, by the way, wouldn't have killed me. They would have just left me with severe kidney failure. So, that's what I talked about with my doctor afterwards. And she said, please don't do this because this is really stupid. And I didn't try that again. So for example, in that case, I was in my room and then I knew that my dad would come in at some point, and then he came in and then I told him about it, and obviously he got really sad, and then we talked about it, and together we figured out a plan and what to do next. And yes. And then there were other times where I've already like gone to a place where I said I'm going to jump down, but then I didn't. So I either didn't have the guts, which is good, obviously, or I just, my rational sense kicked in and knew that this was not right. And there's also, like, apart from the rational sense, there's something inside that always wants to live. And that part kept me alive, I would say. Yeah, so that is that. Before that, there's always like phases. So before you actually end up wanting to do a suicidal attempt, where you like think about it, where you like, oh, life would be better without me, everyone would be better off, and then you like, you live, but you're not really there anymore. So you cross the street without looking. So you just hope that something happens that would lift you from this planet. But it luckily doesn't happen, or it didn't happen for me. You really don't hang on to life that much anymore. Like, you're not focused in your things. You don't care about things anymore. You're there physically, but mentally you're not really there. And then there's always this, would it make sense? Would it not make sense? If that also happens, like something bad, then maybe then, and stuff like that. So there's this phase of, should I or should I not? And in this summer of 2020, this crucial summer, what happened there was that before I came to that point, a lot of things happened. So I was fighting a lot with my external environment. So I had a bad breakup. I lost my job. But that was also like, I didn't lose that job because they just fired me, but because I chose to stand up for myself and say that I don't want to do this like that anymore. But that was like really hard because I wasn't the kind of person who would do that. It was good for me, but it was at a point where I was already like struggling. Then I also lost my flat due to the breakup, and the breakup was really bad. I couldn't eat anymore. So I was like, I didn't feel hunger anymore. I had to force food down, and people noticed that I was losing a lot of weight, like really a lot of weight. I was very thin, and I felt really fragile, because obviously I wasn't consuming enough food. But you know, when you're always fighting because there's so many external things going on that you think you have to fight off, then you're always in this super tense fight mode, fight flight response. And then I also had a fight in within my family, and so I kind of felt really alone. I wasn't, because I had good relationships with my friends, and they were there for me, but still inside I felt really lonely, and like the whole world was against me. And then I was really proud, and I was going to psychotherapy back then, and also my therapist was proud because there were so many things going on, and I had so many realizations, I had so many things I was fighting against, but I was like obviously taking under consideration the circumstances, but I was doing really good. I also had like my first like really spiritual moments out of all that pain, and it was really good. We were making big progress in the therapy sessions. And then at some point, depression hit. And depression, like in my life, is very different to what happens in my external environment. Obviously that triggered that, but I didn't understand how I could be so strong in so many ways. And then this stupid brain of mine is like my strongest and most scary opponent that I just couldn't fight off. And then I felt really stupid. I felt dumb. I felt like a failure. And when depression hit, I didn't go to therapy anymore, which was super stupid, but that's just what I did. And I was feeling really sad, and like my life didn't make sense anymore. And I already knew these feelings, but it went down and stayed down there for not even for very long, but it was a very steep fall. And then like, it was just like a few things that didn't work out, but like minor things. But since I was already on the edge, for example, I was asking for a scholarship so that I can study again, because I didn't have a job and I needed to find some solution. So I wanted this scholarship so that I can study, but I get paid for it. So I just have to work a little bit and, you know, things would be fine. But I didn't get that. And for some reason, this is something like, you know, can happen to anyone. They are not like, we don't want to give you a scholarship because we don't like you, but because it didn't fulfill the criteria. The criteria is stupid, but that's not the point right now. And so I didn't get that scholarship. And for some reason, that sent me off. And on that very particular day, I even said goodbye to a friend, and I already figured out in my head how I'm gonna commit suicide. And I did that with medicine that I got actually prescribed, and I had quite a lot at home because my doctor prescribed me more, and I think that was as an accident. So I googled how much you need. Luckily, Google doesn't give that information away very easily, and the informations I found, they were very like shady. And when I looked it up on the internet, it seemed legit. So like, it would actually kill me. Like, it even said that first my respiratory system stops and then coma hits, or the other way around. So first coma hits and then the respiratory system stops. I remember wanting to take it, and then even like, you know, I put it all in a glass, and then I like held, because it was a liquid, and then I held it really close to me, and like my heart started beating so fast because my body knew what was going to happen, and it didn't want that to happen, because you don't want to die. It's not something that you never want to. It just feels that the pain is so excruciating that you just want to end the pain. You don't want to end life, but you want to end the pain, and that's the only solution that you come up with. And then at some point I got used to that, so I like kind of like made my body used to that, so I did that several times. And then at some point I ended up drinking the liquid. I prepared everything. I even did like a I wrote a letter, and then I thought about all the things I possess, and like distributed them equally between my most loved people. And you know, I cleaned the flat and everything, and left out the money I had, and put it there with the letter, and like, in the letter it said that it's no one's fault. I've written letters like that before. They are all very similar. Like, I I tell everybody that this was my own choice, that I'm sorry and it's no one's fault, blah, blah, blah. And it really is no one's fault because I would never put that on someone like I'm killing myself because of you. It's because it's inside of me, you know, it's my reaction to circumstances. And this was the reaction to my depression and not to the external things that happened. And I locked the door, but I left the key inside. When you leave the key inside in my apartment, then you can't get in from outside, even if you have a key. So I beforehand knew that maybe my my will to live will kick in and I will call someone and want them to come in, which in that case was my mom because she had the extra key. So I kind of like tricked myself. But then what happened was, I don't remember that, but somehow I got up, even though I put the phone very far away, and the medicine should, like, the drugs should have, like, not enabled me to even get up, because you're so, like, you're just down. I don't remember that, but I must have gotten up and called my mom. Because then at some point I heard my mom knocking on the door and she's like, open up, I can't get in. And I said, no, she said, I don't remember that either. And then she didn't know what to do, but then she called the ambulance, and then also I think the fire brigade arrived and police. I wasn't sure because this everything is like very squishy in that moment. The next thing I remember was that I actually let my mom in, but that was when she already called everyone. And then the ambulance arrived and they said, yeah, that I need to come with them and ask me whether I can walk. And I actually could walk. I could even walk downstairs because they wanted to help me, but I was like, I don't want help. And I was in that moment, I was really pissed that it didn't work out. I felt really stupid. And then my mom wanted to come with me in the ambulance, and I was like, no. And then I was driven to the psychiatric clinic. I don't remember that. And I was there. I don't remember that either. And there I was like they wanted to do something, and I said, I don't want to do that. I don't remember that either. So they had to fix me on the bed. Like, I had like straps around me. I remember a moment waking up trying to resist and someone telling me, you can't resist this straps. Yeah, I think they put some liquid inside because I then had, you know, the thing where they put liquid inside of you. I have no idea what's the name in English. Yes, then at some point I woke up. I was in the closed psychiatry for a week. I don't remember a lot from there. I only remembered that at one point I knew that this environment was very unhealthy to me because at that time they were like rebuilding the whole station and it was very little space and too little people actually working there. And like there was one point I remember when a girl tried to break her arm and then at the same time someone found something to slit their wrists and then there was blood all over the toilet and then my roommate pissed herself and like all that happened at once. And I was just like, in here, I'm not gonna get any better. So, yeah. Wisdom. So, now we come to the really, really important part. You've heard the story now. And now I want to tell you how I fought my way back, why it's important to keep on fighting and why it's absolutely not worth it to do something like that. So, first of all, the doctors told me that what I did was really stupid because I could have died, well, obviously, but also I could have done great damage to my body. They don't know, first of all, how I survived, but probably because I called my mom on time, but that doesn't explain how I could walk and everything. I should have died, but I didn't. And they also said that I could have caused great damage like to my body, but luckily that didn't happen. And then I talked to them and I told them that I'm not going to get well here. So they said, okay, we can release you, but we want you to do this program. I said yes, but I never did this program because I wanted to get well by my terms, because I knew that I have gotten a second chance at life and I wanted to use the second chance to live a different life, so to change my life around. And the station I was in and stuff that didn't feel like this would suit this new life. So what I did was I got out of the clinic. Everybody was like, Nina, you can't get out of the clinic. Everybody was super scared. Like my parents called me every day. My friends were scared. Now that I was back in my flat, I was living alone. It's actually this flat right here. And no one liked the idea of me going, releasing myself out of the clinic. And then also I didn't want to take the pills, which I don't recommend to anyone. But this at that point wasn't my path. And I swore to myself that I would do everything that I want to, that I thought that felt right, because I had this. From the moment I left the clinic, I had this inner knowing of what to do, and it didn't feel coherent. But obviously, everybody was worried, and they thought it was a stupid idea, which I understand. But I think I didn't tell anyone at first that I'm not taking the pills. I told them like 2 or 3 months later or something like that. I don't remember, but that's what I did. And then I started really, first of all, because I didn't... because I was weighing like nothing. So I tried to put on weight again, and I tried to teach myself how to eat very healthy again. That's also when I started to stop eating meat, because I didn't like the taste anymore. Not saying that it's better or not better, do whatever you want. But I actually became vegan, like pretty straightforward. I then ended up going back to vegetarian, but then I'm now like 80-90% vegan, I would say, but I still like a few vegetarian things when I eat out. So I first fixed my diet, and then I started trying out rituals. I started meditating more. I went to a monastery, which was really shit. I didn't like it there. I got really upset afterwards, because I thought that these were great people, and how can they be so stuck in the material world and have so many issues, but like be a spiritual church and stuff like that? I was really upset. But then I was like, no, I'm gonna try everything it takes. And then I found a really nice course on Mindvalley, which I've already talked about. The course is by Michael Beckwith, and it's about life visioning. And that's what really, really got me out, because I learned a lot about what the dark night of the soul means, which I was experiencing, which is kind of like a feeling really shit. So as shit as I felt, but on a spiritual level. So you're going through the dark night of the soul. I learned a lot about consciousness, about how to be more aware, and I started establishing rituals. So I have a morning ritual now. I have an evening ritual now, which I've been doing ever since. So in the morning, I get up, I do a course, some kind of course. I'm journaling, I meditate, I do a little yoga, so like 10 minutes, and I try to start the day right. And then in the evening, I do like a 10-minute stretching routine, and if I feel like it, I also meditate. And when I'm in bed, the first few moments before I fall asleep, I used to reprogram my mind. So I try to feed my mind with positive things like you're enough, you're precious, you're doing great, like just positive affirmations. And then throughout the day, I do different things like that too. Also getting me back into sport really helps. So doing sport on, it's a daily basis, I would say, really helped me. And the most important part was learning to listen to myself, to my body's needs. And I, you know, I kind of got a second chance at life. And after that, whatever happened, nothing was as bad as committing suicide. So, for example, I applied for a field of study and I didn't get in. I was sad, but I knew like that it's okay because I've experienced far worse and life is just really good, and I got to appreciate the gift of life more. Like I didn't take life for granted anymore, but it was something very, very precious to me, something very special, because it can just fade away that quickly. It doesn't have to be suicide, but you can die any second. Life is dangerous and it's so precious to be alive. It's really a gift, and I got to reconnect with that essence of what life really means and how important it is. And I made it my mission to prevent people from what I did, what I've experienced, because it's just really, I mean, I kind of needed this experience because it showed me, first of all, to follow my life's vision. It showed me how to live the life I'm supposed to live, and it showed me the beauty of life afterwards and to not take it for granted. So in my kind of life, I needed this experience. It could have been different, obviously, but this getting so close to death, this experience shifted my whole way of perceiving life. And it was very interesting because people who knew me before and then they met me after, they say I was very different. I looked different, I behaved different, and I was more happy, more fulfilled, and I had far more energy. And still, like, to this day, I still feel like I have more energy and I'm more appreciative. I'm looking after myself better. Became a passion to me to teach people how to establish routines, how to really tune inside and listen to our needs. Because when we don't listen to our needs, that's what could happen. That's like the worst that could happen. And it did happen to me because I didn't listen to myself. And I didn't tune in. And I don't want anyone in this world to experience what I've experienced, because it's really shit. After the suicidal attempt, I still got the suicidal thoughts, and they were even worse than before. So it was really hard, and it was so hard to push through, but I knew that I can push through. And this knowing, and also this accepting, like, this is here right now, I'm feeling bad and this needs to go through my body, but it will lift, because suicidal thoughts never stay. They go away at some point, usually when you accept them. And that's what I did, and I accepted it, and then I got out every time, and I got stronger every time. I got through them, I worked through them. So even like a year after, when the suicidal thoughts came back and I thought I couldn't handle them anymore, death was not an option anymore. Because I knew that I could get out, and if I couldn't get out myself, I knew where to seek help, because you can get out and there's people who care about you, who want to help you. And so right now I'm at a point where I know I have to do all my rituals, I have to do all my therapy, I have to really stay tuned with myself. I always reflect every evening if where I am right now is where I'm supposed to be, and if life is too stressful right now. And you know, everything like started to happen for me. I had a different job. I have such an appreciative boss right now. It's a job I'm in the longest so far. And I'm the sportiest I've ever been. I'm eating the healthiest I ever have. And I really wake up every day blissful. And this is because I know how precious the gift of life is. And I really want you to reflect on that. And if you struggle with suicidal thoughts, or you're before a suicidal attempt, or you have already tried and whatsoever, please keep in mind that also this shall pass. It always passes, these thoughts pass, and you can get out of it. Try to look behind, try to go through the door and see what these thoughts are actually telling you. Like, for me, these thoughts came. I haven't had them in, now it's like 6 months, I would say. And they always come when I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. So I know what like my mission in life is. And when I move away from it, because my ego takes over, or, you know, but it's usually the ego that thinks you have to do something which really doesn't make any sense. And then they come. So to me, it's a reminder to, I haven't been tuning in with myself. I haven't been following what I'm supposed to follow. I need to start my routines again if I stop them, or I need to reflect. Maybe there's something at work that doesn't work out the way I want it to. Maybe there is a family issue. Maybe there is an issue with friends. But I know that they are just a reminder to tune back in and to really see if where I'm walking right now is where I'm supposed to walk. And maybe that's the same for you. Maybe you really wanted to do something very different in life, but you ended up doing whatever you're doing now. And the suicidal thoughts are a reminder, just like any kind of illness in your body. They just remind you to really tune in and see whether you're walking the right path. And that's the case for me. And it's not bad to have the thoughts. You can just like any kind of chronic illness, it's just there and you work with it. You make it your friend, kind of. So you're like, okay, so I need to stop whatever I'm doing right now. I need to tune back in. And I really wanted to give that on your way with you, that you, when you are in that state, obviously seek help, because when you're too far in, you can't get out yourself. You're like in this hole and there's like a ladder, but you can't reach it. You need someone to lift you up so you can reach the ladder and climb back out. And that can be a coach, a therapist, whatsoever, but like you need to seek help. And that's what I'm doing too. I'm going to therapy on a regular basis. And I do a lot of things to keep myself healthy, because I urgently needed it, and I don't want to go back to the point I was, never in my life. And I want to help people to never go back to that point in their life, if they had such a point in their life. Yes. Further material. So this episode was not fun, I know, but I hope it was, it inspires you to keep on going and to seek help if needed. If you need help, you can message me anywhere, Instagram, Facebook, comments, whatsoever. Like, if I can help, I'm glad to help. And call a therapist. And if you don't know what to do and you're close, like, call the ambulance. Call someone, be with someone, don't be alone. Tell somebody about it and then make them stay the night. Just don't be alone with it, and seek out help. However that works in the country you're living in. But if you're living in Austria, you can always check in the clinic if you have suicidal thoughts. They always take you in, like they need to have a place for you, and then you're just there, and they and you're in a safe place. Like, you kind of feel safe from yourself. So that's probably the option that works the best. If you still like think you're in control, just make your boyfriend, a friend, a family member sleep over. You sleep over at their place. Just don't be alone. Like, try to be with someone. There is an interesting documentary I watched. It's about a guy who, I think I've already mentioned it, but he committed suicide. He jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. There's very few people who survived that, and he survived it. And he talks about his experience, like about the moment when he jumped off and he wanted to go back, but there was no way back. And it's a really interesting video that makes you think too, and that really like that really inspires you to keep on fighting, because that man has a lot of mental diseases as well, and the way he copes with them and the way he viewed them after the suicidal attempt are very, very inspiring. So that, and then currently I'm reading a book, it's called The Extraordinary Code or something like that. It's by Vision, it's by the founder of Mindvalley. I'll just put the link in the bio. It's really interesting. Yes, it really, it's like a self-help, self-workbook, and I really like it. I already did the course by him on Mindvalley, and now I'm reading his book, and I really like it. So, I hope you not enjoyed this episode maybe, but I provided some helpful material, I really do, and I wish you a great weekend, I wish you a great day, and I hope I'll see you next week. Stay awesome and seek out help, you're not alone, and you can do it, I promise you. Goodbye!